welcome to No Page Unturned, the podcast where Christina, Steph, and myself, Josh, go in-depth discussing books, mainly focusing on those written by BIPOC and LGBTQ plus authors. You don't have to read along with us, but be warned, there will be spoilers ahead.
Okay, so we read up to chapter 50 this time. So we kind of broke our little pattern. So if you didn't read 48 and 49, go read those now. Or I guess it was just 49, right?
I think so.
Yeah,
because next time we'll read 50 through 60, because like 58 through 60 are one page each.
Read to the end of part one, basically.
Yeah.
It's one extra chapter that we read, just because it gets to the end of the part.
It's a better way to do it. If you don't like it, we're sorry, actually. We apologize.
The way these group of chapters start out to the point that we get to at the end of 49... is very strange, like, looking, like, when I reread them again, I'm like, oh, this is, it takes a turn quickly.
It does. A lot happens, like, very quick. It's, you know, this is always, like, the most cathartic part of a Jen Lyons book, though, when all of the threads come together, and you are at the place where you were at the beginning of the book, and you're like, ah, it all makes sense now. I feel good.
Everything that you thought was a giant snarl of chords is actually completely sensible and is playing your favorite movie.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. A soothing organizational video with like nice music is playing over top. Everything comes together.
It's like Marie Kondo with murder and dragons.
Yes. Yes. Krakens, pirates. There's a lot going on in this. For a book where like they spend a lot of time in like a lighthouse, there's some pretty dope shit in this whole book, especially these chapters.
Yeah, this bottle episode is not like,
yeah,
it's like a ship in a bottle. And I don't say that lightly because, as we all know, I hate ships, but you know, take the metaphors you have.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, Kalindra, Galen, Shaloran, and Talia and Siobhan all managed to find each other after spending the book wildly diverging.
In a pirate town! Yay!
Yeah, both philosophically and physically. Town. Why did it have to be a brothel?
That's calm.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's honestly probably not the title of this episode, but...
I don't remember what I thought about Kalindra showing up here. Like, I don't know if I expected it, but I was like, oh! There she is.
It's a little montage-y. Like, she leaves Devor's, and then we get those couple scenes in the last set of chapters where she, like, she goes to the Black Brotherhood place, she finds out that Thane is, or she finds out that they think Thane is dead, unless she's like, oh no, Thane is dead. And then...
She's like, checks out.
Mm-hmm. We kind of quickly, like, learn a few things about, like, Zarya's pirates and the Itlane?
Yeah, the Ithlane and her ex-boyfriend, who she thinks is the Lash for about 2 seconds.
Yeah. And then she shows up in the room with all of our friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a cool scene, though.
It makes sense because Kalindra has been avoiding sharing her memories, and we find out why, as they are forced to share their memories. It makes me wonder what was in that time, in that space, but also I'm glad it's a little montage-y.
It moves quickly.
It's also possible that like Volkerath is being selective about what he is showing because he's trying to prove a point, and so what was in those memories did not serve his purpose.
And coincidentally, the author's purpose.
Yes.
It's always nice when you're a bad guy gets to say what you're thinking, which is kind of just very satisfying.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a good point. But like politicians that we deal with now, Volkerath would say that he proved his point no matter what memories he showed,
and he does, by the end.
That's basically what he does. He's like,
yeah,
I win, and And Kieran is like, oh, well, we saved her. He's like, I'm still right somehow.
Yeah.
Because I say so. Yeah.
Pro tip, don't play games with ancient gods of spite and nothingness. Because they don't play fair.
And when someone asks if you're a god, you say yes.
Is this a game, though, or is this just, like, a really awkward counseling session?
Like, both?
Yeah, kind of both.
Yeah. The ultimate cognitive behavioral therapy.
It's CBT with, like, a hostile.
Yeah.
Hostile person who hasn't finished detox, basically. Like...
And yeah. Also, they want to end the world.
So...
They meet up. Kalindra is saved only by Cone being Cone. And like,
sweet baby.
You're like, well, I need to heal this one random dancing girl who got stabbed. And it turns out it's Kalindra.
Turns out.
Cone being Cone.
You think sorry, go ahead. Do you think that's more Talia slash... Oh my god, I forgot her name. The goddess of luck. Again. Oh,
Taja?
Yeah, you think...
That could be it.
The Esha Mavari.
Yeah, like that little tweak.
Yeah, that in just so happened behavior. To be get Kalindra and heal her.
Yeah. I guess also, you know what? I didn't even go back and look. Does... Talia doesn't pick where they go, right?
No, they were already heading here.
It's just like, it's probably just one of, but it is like one of those things where like that luck tweak, right? That Kalindra would happen to be in the place there. I guess she was also stalking the Lash though, so.
They were looking, but like for them all to meet up, I think they do all kind of look at Talia in the present tense chapters and be like, what now? And she's like, don't worry about it. And so they just move on. Which I like, honestly.
I love Talia so much. There's like a, there's a bit, it's a little bit later, they're talking to the abbess, and Kalindra introduces them all to the abbess, and she's like, she says, Talia, and I forget her last name, but she says her last name, she's like, oh, is that right? And Talia's just like, so excited to be introduced by her full name, which because I think it's the first time because she just learned her full name, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like so cute and sweet.
From Shaloran's mom.
Yeah.
I forget her name. I forget both her names.
Lasorel and Kalis.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to throw out a prediction here. I don't remember what the situation is with bastards in this world, but Boji, the little pirate that's the bastard son of Butterbelly.
Oh.
When Jen Lyons listens to this in the future, she's going to confirm it. I know it.
Which is, I mean, it makes for a very interesting headcanon if true, because I keep picturing Butterbelly as, like, John Goodman, but I picture Boji as that guy from The Mummy, who's, like, the little brat, like, the little, like, I've got all the horses guy.
Okay.
So,
okay, but
I don't know what happened there.
Look,
families come in all shapes and sizes and casting choices.
I just hope Boji's okay.
I don't remember what happens to Boji.
I don't remember either. I can't remember if he gets killed.
I'm honestly neutral on what happens to Boji. I don't really.
Yeah.
It's fine.
No, they're important.
No,
we probably find out in the next chapters because that's the attack on the monastery and Boji is on the pirate ship.
Yeah. And it is an interesting twist, which I like for, you know, just like flavor, that the Lash is undead, has this incredibly powerful cornerstone and this incredibly powerful crazy girlfriend, but she's like, I can't make the dead think. When they're dead, they kind of suck. So yeah. I need this one to be alive. Hence Boshi. It's like such a great way to like inhibit total power creep, but also like it's she's so overpowered.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like in a very realistic way too. Like, yeah, of course the dead would be stupid.
Or like this totally alien intelligence would be like, oh, I broke most of them. Oh, well.
Crap.
It's fine. There's more where that came from.
Well, she does keep forgetting to feed him though.
Right.
Well, I do think the conversation that they show Javon having with the Lash and then with Sulis is very interesting, and like it reveals a lot. Like Sulis wants the Island of Divorce destroyed, and what's the I think it's even better is getting that same conversation like Cone with World Hearth relaying that same conversation back to the group, like finding out each revelation is like, oh, the Lash is a Kraken. The Lash is a Kraken. And it's like, and she has a girlfriend, and Chalorian's like, oh, the Daughters of Laika can't have a girlfriend now?
It's like, it's a dragon?
And Code is like, yeah, it's with the... with Jahemia, I assume the dragon? And I just imagine everybody in their room's jaws, like, on the ground. Like,
the ultimate gossip hour, honestly.
I think it's also a really good storytelling reminder that, like, you can have as many characters as you want, but like they all have to have meaningful motivations. And like the Lash has a great one. It accidentally dovetails with a lot of what's going on. Yeah. She's just like, no. I just need to find a therapist. There's nobody in network, and like it's been really fucking hard. Like, I just can't.
She's just been so moody lately.
Right, like, I think that her Lexapro is kind of, like, pooping out, so we need to get her some Wellbutrin.
Yeah. And then but like, Sulis is that toxic friend that comes in, and she's like, bitch, your girlfriend's busted. Dump her ass.
Use essential oils. Everything else is poison. Shut up.
Let's go to the club.
Buy into my MLM. But yeah, and specifically it's Sulis who shows up. So this timeline's specific version of Sulis, as opposed to the uber Sulis who is Zeltareth.
This is where things start to really hurt my brain.
It gets real confusing. I have read this now 4 times and I'm like, okay, I had to read it 20 minutes before this podcast started and be like, we're laying this out.
Sulis is a demon.
As of last book.
In another timeline, Sulis became a demon and succeeded in absorbing the souls of many powerful people with a lot of tenye enough that when things didn't go exactly her way, she was able to go back in time to a certain point, right after which they say is when, what's his name? I'm forgetting all the names today.
Grist? Grist resurrected the 8 immortals?
Yeah. What was that guy's name?
Grist.
Grist. I almost said Gadget, but I knew that was wrong. And then apparently it has gone wrong, or not wrong, but not exactly how Zeltareth wants, multiple times, and so that Zeltareth has had multiple gods and powerful Tenye people absorbed into them. And this Sulis has only gotten to the demon part, and because Zeltareth is here, Sulis is likely never going to reach the Zeltareth phase. Which is what, and at this point in the book, this is when Sulis figures out that the Devorin prophecies are Zaltaroth and wants the island destroyed. That way she can foil Zaltaroth's plan so Sulis can eventually become the new Zaltaroth.
So basically she is literally sabotaging herself, which is almost funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's not quite herself.
It's
herself AU.
It's complicated. Right. Yes. And this is also where they figure out, okay, the prophecies are Zaltaroth leaving little clues for herself or over like what happens.
Yeah, so she can reenact
things
that she did before to get to a certain point.
Yes.
Yeah.
In her timeline.
Yeah.
She's like, I forget all your names, but anyway, the one with the red hair, kill that one.
Yeah. That kid with the sword, kill him, make him a demon. Oh no. He's still a tenacious guy with a sword.
We didn't like that. Alright.
Why does Kalindra have to die?
Because of something that she did in a different timeline.
Yeah, she was like, it was something like she was like a demon slayer or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Or it's her connection with Jareth, or I don't know if we ever actually found out.
No, but it definitely came up previously in the book, because she talked to that one dude who was the only one who got it.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, it was the only Galileo, and he was like, y'all are stupid, and they're like, the Earth goes around the sun, you fool.
Okay, here's my theory. If there was no Kalindra, Janelle would not have figured out what was going on with Kieran and... I'm literally forgetting every name today.
No,
King of Demons.
Oh, Zaltaroth.
Yeah.
Valkaroth.
I think that's probably fair.
No.
What?
Not Zaltaroth.
Valkaroth.
Valkaroth, okay.
Because it is... Kalindra is the last one that when things go awry... When Valkaroth says, oh, I've won. And then the whole thing breaks down with Kieran and Valkaroth, and then Janelle puts it together. And if Kalindra wasn't there, maybe they would have never figured that out. And that's why Kalindra needs to be eliminated.
I see that. Yeah. Guys, I gotta confess, I've had an intrusive thought for like the last 5 minutes. And it's Inspector Gadrith.
Oh no! That would be, it'd be horrible. It would just
imagine
like
him in the trench coat, the hat though.
The trench coat would open up on horrors. It would just be Gadrith naked with a bunch of torture devices.
Yeah.
His little propeller head would be like. I can't even imagine.
Arm bones?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Go-Go Gadget Soul Stealer.
Thanks, I hate it.
Sorry, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like, I need to say this so that I can more meaningfully participate in this conversation.
No, I think we should option it. I don't know. It deserves at least like a pilot.
Feel free to make a t-shirt out of that.
Literally no one would get it. It would be awesome.
It's a very niche audience.
Those are the best t-shirts.
Yeah.
Right. So
timey-wimey fucking Sulis is Zaltaroth, but also not. And so Sulis must kill Zaltaroth. And, Javon is there, and the Lash wants to fix girlfriend. And then, they come up with a plan where they're like, okay, we have to give Javon Thane's Grail. Where is it?
Where is it?
Of course it's in fucking Drahemia's
lair.
Which is... It's like one chapter, and it's, like, such a dope, but also... deeply unsettling chapter.
I don't like undersea stuff at the best of times. And I don't mean like I disdain it, like I hate ships. I mean, it creeps me out and I like it.
Okay.
But it, It's horrible, but it's great.
Yeah. Something about, so yeah, like,
very, very upsetting.
They just, like, casually become mermaids.
Yeah.
For a while. Yeah, casually.
That's they're weird. Like, forgot completely.
Like, temporarily becoming mermaids is disturbing to me somehow.
They're like, if you pay enough money.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to go talk to the right lady on the docks and she'll make you a mermaid, apparently.
I love that there's that one NPC who's like, give me just some like game end amount of money. Just like, by the time you never buy anything in the game, you have that amount of money. And they're like, okay, cool. You want to be a mermaid? Here's this like side quest.
Here you go.
Takes two minutes.
You're going to be upset at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's also a chessboard with people who are alive.
This is also when Talia starts to, like, she levels up in her, like, eight immortalness, because now she understands all languages.
Oh, right, yes.
And I like that she, like, starts understanding the priestess and looks at little Taja, and little Taja's like, you know, just go with it.
I love little Taja. Little
Ishi. I don't know, something about just like temporarily becoming mermaids is so weird.
Weirdly unsettling.
In a good way, yeah. But unsettling, yeah. Mm-hmm. Unsettling is a good word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also interesting, like, I think that would have been a good set piece, but it's clearly on page 400 of a 500-page book, and John Lyons was kind of like, I don't want to. It's empty. There's no one there. We're not going to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the ocean is mostly empty. But yeah.
Of, like, things that can threaten our characters.
In real life.
In real life. Like, it's, you know, like, it's a lot of just water. There's not necessarily things going on.
Okay, do you think there are mermaids, permanent mermaids in this world? I would like to know.
Oh, are the Ithlani are, like, kind of mermaids?
Yeah, they're, like, fish people.
I don't know. They're, I don't know.
And the Vorimer used to be.
Weird that they would turn into mermaids if there weren't mermaids. Right? That would be weird.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think the Ithlani are, like you
Did
said.
Did they use the word mermaid in the book?
No.
Don't think so.
So to them, it's just becoming partially fish.
Yeah.
Fish. Yeah. Bird.
Yeah.
So they may
like
not
if you think
be
about
mermaids.
It, mermaids are not biologically ideal.
No. Difficult to do a lot of things.
Yeah. Makes more sense to have the more specific parts they're talking about, including, like, the gills and, you know, useful bits.
I mean, maybe that priestess gave them, like, the tourist special, you know?
They it makes also, me like, get to swim with dolphins and, like, boop sea tortoises. That would be great. I would.
That actually would be pretty fun.
I would pay extra for that.
Yeah.
You were going to say? Sorry.
I just realized there's nothing stopping from someone becoming a new Witch King.
Yeah, I don't think so, right? Like, you've got, like, I think new Witch Kings are kind of still happening, right? Like, the Toilet God.
Yeah.
Is
you
Witch
just
King
have to pick a
right
domain
no,
and
I feel
defend
like I'm
it.
Forgetting.
Oh, God King.
God King, yeah.
Yeah.
Witch King is Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there could theoretically be a god king that's like, yo, I really want some mermaids to exist.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Or let's nominate like Butterbelly.
I always think about, like, you know, what if Jen Lyons writes a book that's another, like, 500 years in the future of this world, and suddenly there's mermaids.
They do love mixing things up. They like to put animals on people.
Yeah, we got everything else. Ichthyoids doesn't seem that far off from snake people, horse people.
Yeah.
People horses,
yeah.
Which are different somehow.
Aquatic firebloods.
There you go. cold bloods? Lukewarm salt?
Seahorses?
Seahorses, yeah, that was the obvious one.
Whale people.
Anyway.
Anyways.
Drahemia's lair.
Is awful.
Shabad.
I like that.
It does make me want to see the other dragon's lairs, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they comment, like, you know, Shiranikal had the permanent chorus of trapped, screaming people for all eternity, yeah. So that was less than cool.
Yeah. Was it Ironheart that had all the hyenas?
Yeah.
Or was that a Sulis thing?
That was more Sulis.
Yeah.
Ironheart definitely showed up and was like, more teeth. I do like how the theme of this book is, no matter how bad you are, just fix it and do your best and we'll still love you. Because even the Lash is like, look, no. She's just confused. It's fine.
Yeah. It's
like,
really
don't
sweet.
Worry about it. It's like, it's really sweet with like Cone and Senere. Everyone's like, no, you learned your lesson. We're doing better. And with Senere, there was some interference there, we learn.
Oh my god, yeah, that shit is fucked up.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
It does make me wonder what Kalindra's like. I guess Thane really fucked her up, that she sees all these people around her that have done probably way worse things, and like, there's people among Kalindra right now that have done way bigger betrayals, and yet this betrayal that she knows is about to happen is weigh so heavily on her that it allowed Valkoroth to take her.
I mean, it did just happen.
It just happened. She's been going on this whole time about how her child is in danger, but it turns out her child is in danger because of her.
Yeah.
And also, like, over the course of all of this, she has, like, sort of come to learn it's not just that, like, she allowed a kraken and a dragon to attack the monastery. Like, she may have opened up the entire universe to being destroyed through those actions, and that's not great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it does allow us to finally get Jareth into the book.
Yay.
I
do
know.
Love that. Go ahead. I do love that Galen still tries to, like, connect to Jareth, even though he knows Jareth is, like, a demon.
Yeah, that was a little sad.
It's a little sad, but it's like also like, you know, it kind of ends in a fairly positive way. It's like, I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Jareth is a strong boy.
There's, yeah, like, he's managing.
Yeah.
And people around him know what's going on, which is
Yeah, I think crucial. That's a big part of it. Like, he's got like a support network.
Yeah, less like Janelle, who had
Valisfar.
Super bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, she does mention, though. She is like, you know, like, I was really, this when this happened to me, I was really young, but I also had, like, Valisfar as my own personal physicker.
Right.
Which, like, is not nothing. And then there's, like, that sort of, like, awkward, like, reminders, like, yes, my brother is a strong person. And I'm like, oh, right. He's your brother.
Yeah.
All right. That's, yeah. Though there's an interesting note, footnote. Because, you know, Janelle's like, I can't remember, Kieran or Galen or one of the fucking demon boys is like, this happened because of me. And Janelle is like, nah, I'm pretty sure this happened because of me. And the footnote is like, I'm pretty sure Jareth did this to himself in another universe. Like, Jareth was marked for this by his actions in a previous universe or timeline or whatever.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to play with. All of these books play with the concept of, like, the Chosen One or, like, Destiny. And it's interesting to see, like, because we have the time loop, we also have different Chosen Ones. Like, in another book, it's like, heavily implied that Jareth and Kalindra played a much bigger role.
Yeah.
And therefore, like, who knows exactly what they were doing? Maybe they were the chosen ones, or...
Yeah, you know. Like the leaders of the demon resistance, or something. Like, Could've been. Yeah.
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 I don't think I ever thought about that before, but so often in books like this that have chosen ones are like, you know, come from like Yeon High divine reckoning, this is gonna happen, when all the like quote unquote chosen ones from Kieran down to Jareth are all because of the actions that they decided to take in other timelines, past lives. Mm-hmm. Like, even the quote-unquote prophecies are all, like, they're not, you know, they're not really prophecies. It's a guideline for... Yeah, all the, like, chosen comes from just things that they already did.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm explaining that quite right.
There actually is no such thing as fate.
Right. And also, like, the 90s and 2000s were big on, like, the reluctant chosen one, like, stepping into your destiny. So it's like, oh, no, this is really hard. I don't want to do it. Whereas these people are like, they volunteered. They were like, no, things are going bad. Let's fix them. Which is a nice take. Like, I really like it, so.
And then on top of that, the Eight Immortals manipulated things mm-hmm. to make these things happen. So there's really... Kieran is only the chosen one because half of Sarek's soul volunteered, and then Thane manipulated Kariel and Theron, and... But Sarek's soul is only there because of Janelle's past life. And Janelle's past life only did those actions by the manipulation of Zaltaroth. And Zaltaroth, it's...
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah.
Almost pre-written in so many ways. But I think that it's like...
But right, at the like, same time, yeah. It's not.
Yeah.
Right.
Is what's weird about, weird and, like, in a cool way about this story.
Yeah. Yeah, because there is something to that, like, yeah, like, I don't, you know, oh, I don't want to be the hero, like, just because fate chose this for me doesn't mean I want it for me. And, yeah, I think a lot of these people are like, I don't know if, like, turns out, like, a bunch of meddling gods and demons for thousands of years have kind of put me in this scenario. But also, yes, I choose this.
I guess my point is that, like, so often the chosen ones in book are the chosen ones just because. But in this book, you can trace back why all these people are on this path and on this journey that follow these prophecies that were manipulated by these gods. You can, like, trace back to why it all happened in a very interconnected web of events.
Yeah.
Which you don't really think... The chosen hero is usually just the chosen hero because they're the chosen hero, because the god said they were, or the prophecy said they were.
But this, you can, like, you're the blood of your long lost ancestor runs in your veins. Here you go, kid.
Right.
But not like, no, it was
you're the lost king. Inheritance still rules. Yeah. Democracy, a long way off. Hurry up, fix it. Speaking of their past life choices, we get two scenes in the prisons, which are... I wanted your opinions on them, because, like, I have my own thoughts, but I actually, like, obviously, in recorded history, I'm often wrong about these things. So the first one, where they're discussing how the Daughters of Laka were the indigenous species and maybe you shouldn't be murdering them. That was Sarek and Syndrel. Is that you guys read on that?
Yes.
Okay.
And Syndrel goes off to do this Sky Tree project.
Right. She wants to, or they want to fix it because they are they in that timeline, right?
Yeah.
And Sol and Eric is the soldier in question. But then the other one, the other old world scene where they're talking about a child with empathy that they're going to wall off. What is happening?
Wait, telepathy. Right.
Right. They're worried that they're going to take away the empathy when they take away the telepathy. Is that... Yeah. That's not... Who's the kid? Is that Willow's
father? I think it's just some random kid. Just a kid. I think it's just like... And it's the first kid, and there's like a moment where the narrator is like, I wonder if they have the eyes of the person that they were in their last life. So it sounds like it's just like, it's the first kid, but it's not anybody we know.
So then the person who's going to wall off their gift is what? Relisvar, maybe? Question mark?
Yeah.
Or the previous iteration of Relisvar. Mm. Ravarik.
Where is that scene with the kid?
Which it's after, way at the end. It's like 48 or 49.
It's just as like Senare is going through her telepathy shit.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be anyone in particular, but that was kind of my read. And I think I don't remember who. Like, it could just be the super, super past lives of Senare and Thirvishar, when Thirvishar was apparently a much worse person.
Hmm. Yeah.
But I kind of don't think so, because it doesn't sound like Thirvishar at all.
We have mostly just been all the memories that we've gotten so far, too, I think have been Sarek memories, right?
Right. But neither of those super sound like Sarek?
Yeah, I mean...
Except maybe if Senare is in Sarek's place.
Yeah, that's what it's saying, that maybe, like, Sarek is...
Is the conscientious objector.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of thought it was, like, you know, sort of not meant to be people we knew, but just meant to, like, illustrate. Like, it's part of Senare's prison, right? So, like, the memory is driving home the idea that, like, when you wall off telepathy in someone's brain, you also kill their emotion, or their ability to feel empathy. And so, and she's realizing that that has happened to her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, too, that it's just... It's just past context. Things
are connected, though.
All right, putting it on the list to confirm with.
Yeah. It could also just be that she wanted to kind of like explain, like the first kid, too. You know, like this is like.
Was it the first kid, or was it just like one of the?
I think they said he was the first child. I think that's why they were so hesitant about it. It's because he was the first one.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, there's so little they understand about reincarnation.
Yeah.
They're saying so. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me, too. It's super interesting because it feels to me like. Do you remember the absolute piece of shit third X-Men movie?
Yes. Barely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they did to Jean Grey. It was so sexist.
I don't remember what they did,
but Professor, like, they'd have a flashback and Professor X is like, they have this psychic kid and they don't know what to do because she's like telepathic and telekinetic, and he like walls it off, and then she's like not strong enough for all of her life, and then she gets understandably mad that no one has told her this when she grows up. It is such a bad movie.
They basically, like, the Phoenix Force is supposed to be, like, this, it's, like, one of the, like, primordial powers of the Marvel Universe that chooses a host with Jean Grey, and they turned it into, this is all of Jean Grey's stored up power plus trauma, and it made, nowadays, Professor X has a lot of flaws in the comics, but it made Professor X seem such like a horrible person in the movies by doing
that. He's like a bad person. Wolverine kills her at the end, and that's presented as a good thing, which is fucked up. And it just like, okay, sorry, this is not X-Men 3 was a bad movie podcast, but my point is that like, it's an interesting, and it's an interesting thing that like has a lot of history too, because like those are what the infancy gospels are. The like non-canonical gospels that were written in the early few hundred years after Jesus, where people were like, yeah, no, Jesus wasn't God when he was a kid. Can you imagine a God child? And it's just stories about how Jesus is a little bitch. Like, he kills a kid because he's mad at him, and he's like, well, I can bring him back to life. Who cares? And he does. And he mouths off to his parents who hate him, and it's just like, but people read these things and they're like, this is sacred. And it's like, no, it's satire. Anyway, this has been Infancy Gospel Corner.
Okay, I have a theory. What if the kid is the guy who brings Relosvar to see Teen Cenere? Because when Relosvar kills him, he produces a star tier. And the guy is like, oh, you don't see many of these anymore.
Because he's you think he was like one of the founders?
He's one of the founders. He's a founder's soul. What if it's the same guy?
I would love just a little that. Wink That's and a nod great theory
from Jen Lyons about like, yes, we really don't understand reincarnation because this motherfucker turned into a slaver.
So,
I like that idea a lot.
The kid is the same guy?
Yeah, like it just instead of the kid being somebody who we know. It happens that the same person is in both of these it happens to be the same soul, I should say, in both of these people across Cenere's experiences.
He's fallen a long
I don't think
way,
it means yeah. anything. I just think it could maybe be no, like a...
It'd be kind of cool, though. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, we may be overthinking it.
I think we are.
For sure.
That's what we do.
This is just the final nail in the coffin of Cenere realizing what Relosvar did to her.
Yeah.
Because now she is seeing Relosvar do it to someone else who has telepathy. Mm. And she, you know, she's the one that says, this'll fuck him up. You're gonna remove all his empathy. And I think it's just like, by taking this from Sarek's memory of seeing what Relosvar does to another person with telepathy, she can finally like realize what Relosvar really did to her. And that, because throughout this book, even though she has switched sides, she still like has sort of wards off her feelings a bit. And this is both closing the door on everything she admired about Relosvar and opening the door on all of her emotions and empathy and everything else. And it's just easier for her to realize it, seeing it happen to this boy rather than seeing it happen to her.
And then ultimately she was just a tool the whole time. Like, she was never a partner. She was never intended to, you know, work with him. She was always a tool, and a tool that he manipulated to his own purpose, however he needed.
Yeah.
Because there's a chance if they show the memory of it, this happening to Cenere of removing telepathy, there's a chance Cenere would rationalize it as like, oh, even though she switched sides, at the time Relosvar was doing the right thing. But by showing this boy, and then the person we assume is Relosvar doing this to this boy, him being like, I have permission from the Assembly and his parents to do this.
Yeah, I think you're totally right that the main focus is Cenere's emotional development. But I still think it would be cool if Steph was right. My wild theory is that they removed... I mean, think about the other telepath we know with very little empathy. It's the mimics. So
yeah, well, I think they mentioned something like that, right? Like that telepaths either in the memory become crazy, not unlike mimics, or they become too empathetic. And actually, the bit where he was talking about how people become too empathetic really made me think of Thervishar.
Yeah,
Thervishar is very empathetic, even though he doesn't always necessarily show it, and like had to balance that with being geish for most of his life.
Yeah. I don't think Thervishar is too empathetic, though.
I don't think it's, like, a problem. Like, I think he has a balance, but considering, like, who he is and what, and, like, the... what he has always seemed like from the outside to other people,
right. Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't guess that he is, like, this empathetic dude.
Maybe it helps to him not to reach that too empathetic state by having the memories of Semillian. You know, who, even though he saved the Empire, they turned on him and killed him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Thervishar has a healthy perspective on things.
Mm.
Good boundaries.
Yeah, yeah.
I like how, I mean, he's also much older than everyone, kind of by accident.
Yeah.
So I love how he's just, like, the only mature person in there.
Frequently the only adult in the room.
Yeah, including all the other adults in the room.
Yes, including, like, the multiple literal mothers. Parents. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's also the more...
deity queen.
He's also the more scholarly, bookish, introverted, whatever you want to call it. So even though he does have empathy for people, maybe he doesn't want to be around them as much. Mm-hmm.
That probably
helps.
But
we do know he had wild college years.
Yes.
That's the book I want.
The fucking the frog wild... or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, didn't they make a frog really big?
Yeah.
That's the book I want, the Thervishar in college book.
Bro, make the frog really big, bro. This would be sick.
Can you imagine what kind of... Yeah. Anyway.
Big frog.
I definitely... Like, at least a short story. Come on, man.
But yeah, Senere, the fucked up part is Senere, like, remembering the screams of all the people that she murdered over the years.
I feel really bad for her. I already liked her. I don't... Yeah, I know, this is just, right? Like...
We liked her when she was actively murdering.
Mm-hmm. Right? She had that cute little dog.
Uh-huh.
Can't hate someone with a dog.
No, that's, yeah.
Come on, that's Rebel, so cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... So she, understandably, has a bad time, dips out. And there was, like, a magic theory moment where she and Thervishar were, like, trying to figure out. It's like, okay, last case scenario, if we really can't stop Volkaroth, here's what we do to yeet all of us into the Nithral wound. We'll all die, but it might work.
It'll save the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So they're like, here's the nuclear option.
Yeah, and so she left, like, the glyph for the remaining part of the nuclear option. But, you know, Thervishar being Thervishar, he wants to get his girl back.
He wants to at least try.
Yeah. He wants to footnote together.
I really
Let's go back to the path. Go ahead.
I really like the... So, you know, Senere is always ready to do the nuclear option or the option that's, like, self-destructive. But in the beginning, one of the things I really liked was... it was depressing, but Kalindra reflecting, you know, that if the ends justify the means, and then you don't achieve your ends, like, Jesus Christ, that's horrifying. But by the same token, everybody on the, like, the good guy side, on the Hell Warrior side, is basically like, no, the means justify the end. It doesn't matter how it ends as long as we're trying. And that is kind of nice. Like, the way that we're going about this is the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. And it's actually working. Well, not right now, but it might work, which is the only thing that we can count on.
Love is kind of winning out.
Love is kind of winning. Cone and yeah. Galen make out at a very inopportune moment, but we Gerald love it. Gerald
saved Kalindra.
They are so in love in a fucked up way. It's going really well.
Got their bone down on. There's many smooches. And non-smooching appreciation of library skills.
Well, we love to see that too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, like, and like, people aren't bitching at each other as much as they were. Like, everybody's supported. Like, there's a bit where I think Javon, you know, is like, I think Senray's, you know, suicide plan is correct, which is how I know it's the wrong thing to do.
Because I really historically liked that moment too.
Have terrible thoughts on things.
Right. I am self-aware now, after 400 pages, enough to know. So yeah, a lot of emotional progress here.
Yes.
I do like the scene in the past where it finally is like, oh, here are all the Avengers meeting up and we're all...
I was like, I don't think so, but it's possible that
that's how it ended in 49.
No, 49 ends with everything going poorly, where that's like the Volkeroth, like, I win, bitch! And Kieran's like, no! And Volkeroth's like, fuck you! Turn this car around!
It's real petty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited. And the next part's like only 10 chapters, right? And they're short.
Oh, yeah. It's like 10 chapters that are the length of.
Yeah.
Not even that.
So next episode will be the last one for House of Always. Then we can start to Discord of Guards! I'm excited.
There's going to be a lot to talk about for Discord.
Yeah, and I haven't reread it since we first read it when we were like really pushing through it. So I'm sure there's a ton I missed.
Yeah, I only remember the main beats, and maybe not even those. It's kind of like when a little kid tries to tell you about an action movie. It's like, and then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Who knows if any of that is accurate or helpful.
Yes. I feel like that's us a lot on this show, though.
At least we break it down by chapter. At least we're at least delineated in time.
And then we were wrong, and then there was another thing we forgot, and another thing we forgot. And then Josh was right.
Ignorance and enthusiasm.
You know what we should do?
That's our motto.
At the beginning of the Discord of Gods episodes, we should briefly go over all of our predictions were.
Oh my god, yeah, at least we have those in writing.
Yeah, and just be like, I predicted this, and this, and Josh predicted all of these things which were right.
Yeah, we should keep a little counter going. Just like, you know, Steph and Christina. Hovering around 10%. Josh. Yeah. That bar is going Brandon Sanderson going fast.
Yeah. All right, anything else about these chapters?
I was trying to think of some, but all I kept hearing was Josh was right.
It's a beautiful phrase.
Listen, I respect that.
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I'm psyched for the last... I'm always psyched for the last, like, batch of chapters in a Jen Lyons book, because they're always beautiful and awesome and fun.
They go fast and they fall so nicely into place.
They do, yes. Extremely so nice. Satisfying.
Yeah.
I don't remember, did Kalindra actually, she threw herself off the side and Jareth caught her, right?
Yes, yes, it was beautiful. Because he's fast, like a demon. So actually, if he had never been a demon, he wouldn't have been able to catch her.
That's true.
Well, they're also in somebody else's mind, so it's like the Matrix. Yeah. So like, debatable.
That's true, yeah.
But I think maybe the level of despair that she would have been at might have killed her anyway.
Possibly. Yeah.
So what are y'all reading?
What are you reading, Josh?
I just finished Tress of the Emerald Sea by Brandon Sanderson, Brando Sando. It was very good. It is, what if Brandon Sanderson wrote The Princess Bride? And I thought that throughout the entire book. And then I'm currently writing my review for it. And then fucking Brandon Sanderson has to go into the acknowledgments and be like, oh yeah, I wrote this because me and my wife watched The Princess Bride. I was like, fuck, I can't put that in the review now. Yeah. You said it.
You totally can.
I think that was the original secret novel, right? The one that he wrote just for his wife. I think that's what...
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also just finished Gods of the Wildwood by R.J. Barker, which is an Orbit book, which was also very, very good. The premise is kid is picked to be the chosen one, and then it turns out he was not the chosen one, and the new chosen one has completely fucked society. And the kid that was not chosen is now an adult, completely avoiding people and society, and basically choosing to, you know, he's got avoidance. He's avoiding responsibility, avoiding helping others, and then he's sort of put in this situation where he has to make a decision of actually helping others. And it has a complicated magic system that the magic is kind of evil, but then it might not be. And it's very good. It has a lot of, it's kind of dark, a lot of tough choices, a lot of, am I going to choose to survive or choose to make a stand and possibly die because of it? And it was very good. It was kind of long, but I enjoyed it a lot. And then now I'm reading, it just came out as of this recording, He Who Drowned the World by Shelley Parker Chan, which is the sequel to She Who Became the Sun, which came out in 2021, which, like, I didn't read in 2021, but I read last year, and I think it was probably even above House of Always, I think was the best book of 2021.
Top five or your top three or whatever we did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely picked it up because you recommended it.
And this is the sequel to that. I literally have, it just came in the mail like yesterday. So I'm not technically reading it because I haven't started it, but I'm about to. So by the time you hear this, I'll have probably finished it.
Nice.
Christina, what are you reading?
So I am reading, I just started Mammoth at the Gates, which is Evoy, and who also wrote Siren Queen, which I think Steph reviewed. Really good, obviously, but don't know a lot. And it's part of the Singing Hills cycle, which is about like this folklorist, basically, and his snotty bird friend, which I love. I've missed animal companions. I'm glad that there are some people bringing them back. There was like a real dearth of them for a while. Steph, what are you reading?
I had one of those like weekends where, you know, when you have like a bunch of books on the go and then you realize you only have like a couple chapters left in all of them. So I finished like two books in one weekend. So I have started, I'm back on Paladin's Hope by T. Kingfisher.
Very fun. Yay!
Yeah. It's a little fucked up, but it's fun.
Well.
Yeah. Kingfisher. And then I am on The Bell in the Fog by Lev A.C. Rosen, which is coming out in October. It's a sequel to Lavender House. I'm super enjoying it. Listeners, this episode will come out long after, but we're going to interview... Oh, I'm going to. You guys are welcome to as well. Going to interview Lev A.C. Rosen at the beginning of October when the book comes out. So if you haven't, whenever this episode drops, go back and listen, read that book and listen to that interview.
Read both those books. They're really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or by the time this comes out, I will have read The Bell in the Fog.
Yeah, I'm really, really... The Bell in the Fog is way better so far.
Nice. Yeah. Which is not an insult to the first book.
It's like a much more, like, you can tell that, like, the story and, like, everything in it is just, like, a little more matured.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of scene setting. Yeah, it's part of the Singing Hills series. So
when the tiger came down the mountain, is that part of it?
Yeah,
that was
the second one. Yeah.
And the Empress of
Salt and Fortune. So it starts with Empress of Salt and Fortune, yeah.
And they're short.
I want to read those, actually.
Right.
They're really good. They're really short. And they're surprisingly complex. So, like, if you're looking for a novella, but you want, like, novel level of intricacy, super worth your time.
Oh.
I give them as gifts a lot.
I'm also reading another book. It's called The Blighted Stars by Megan O'Keefe. And it's so, I just want to explain it really quick because it's so cool. Humanity has, like, basically figured out how to back up their lives onto, like, they call them maps, but I imagine they're like hard drives or disk, and they're like, they're trying to discover a new Earth, and it's a little dystopian because, like, now humanity's government has boiled down to, like, four family gigantic companies that have formed, like, an alliance, and one of those companies' families is being accused of releasing because they keep trying to find a new Earth to settle on. And there's, like, a mysterious, like, growth that keeps appearing on these new planets that they're finding. And it's, like, connected to one family, supposedly. And you'll die, and then you can get resurrected via your map. And one of the person that accused this family of that keeps spreading this growth, she basically uploads her map in this book to someone close to the family without spoiling it. And so she has to pretend to be part of she's like a bodyguard to the son. And she's basically, while she's really a revolutionary, she has to pretend to be the bodyguard of the son. And then it turns out the son is not like his father. And it's sort of like do I kill him? Or is he actually different from
his
family, even though he's privileged?
And then they smooch?
It does not come off as YA at all. It's okay. Very science fiction. But I like it a lot.
Nice. All right, Josh, where can people find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky, on Twitter, I guess, on Twitch, at 405wits.
Steph.
You can find me on Blue Sky, Instagram, and most social media at Steph O. Kingston.
And you can find me on Blue Sky at Christina Ladd, and you can find all of us on geeklyink.com in the reading section, multiple podcasts. Come join us. It's a fun time.
We do stuff, and we're fun.
Oh, okay. You can find the podcast on Blue Sky.
Yeah, we finally have a social. So, nice. All right, books.
The episode is over.
As was foretold.
Books.
I wanted to see if someone else would say it.
Thank you for listening to No Page Unturned, part of the Geekly Inc. podcast family. You can now find us on Blue Sky at No Page Unturned. Our amazing theme music is by Bad Sparrow, and our cover art is by Mangoyu Art.